For December the 1st, 2023, we talk about Lethal Company, Eye of the Temple, Spider-Man 2, and much more. Welcome to Level 481. My name is Cole Ross.
I'm Dennis Furia.
I'm Moxie.
And I'm Ben Merkel.
And you're listening to The Level. It's a podcast for people who love video games. Welcome back, everybody, after American Thanksgiving.
And after your birthday. Happy belated birthday.
Thank you. I think we did the happy birthday.
We preemptively.
Yeah, we okay. I'm not going to deign it.
I'm sorry, I swear to God, that never happens.
Pre-birthday? Yeah, that's a ghastly euphemism.
I love the idea of American Thanksgiving. It's like, none of the rest of y'all motherfuckers better be thankful.
Nope.
This is our day to be thankful.
Yeah, we have a monopoly on gratitude, and we only save one day for it. I say American Thanksgiving to differentiate from that weird non-Thanksgiving that they have in Canada.
From the wrong Thanksgivings.
Yeah.
You know, the Thanksgiving without a genocide undertone.
Hey, I'm not going to say Canada's got some, Canada's got some splaining to do. Vis-a-vis some First Nations res schools and yeah.
Yeah.
Not to start with a bummer, though. I'll just jump out and say I don't have much in the way of banter. It was all just family stuff. So
all right.
So there's that. I'm done. I'm done.
They're sternly serious at the Ross house for Thanksgiving.
I mean, it wasn't like serious, but unless it's a particularly funny story, I don't like talking about my family very much.
Gotcha. Yeah,
That was a thing very early on in the podcasting. And just my mom was like, you're not talking. She didn't say it this way, but like, you're not talking shit about us, are you? And I'm like, no, that's
just like all the time. That's like half the podcast.
It's all of it is what it is. Everybody's really, really interested in you, Mom.
Yeah. I think my mom listened to like an episode or two, you know, a year into us doing it. And her concept of what the show is has not evolved since.
Okay.
and that's always entertaining.
Yeah. So that's me. Ben, how about you?
I'm doing pretty good. I went down to Portland for Thanksgiving and had a really chill time there. So that was nice. I rewatched the movie Gladiator with friends.
Oh,
that movie does not hold up in my opinion.
Doesn't compare to American Gladiator. As long as we're differentiating,
true.
with Zap and Pyro.
way better action in that one.
Were you doing like pre-gaming to go see Napoleon? Were you on your Ridley Scott kick?
No, it was a choice made by one person in our party, and we all just kind of went along with it.
Okay. But,
we're not friends anymore. So
No. we also upheld our Thanksgiving tradition of watching a Scream movie the day after Thanksgiving. So
okay.
we saw Scream 6, the New York one, and it is, as formula dictates, it was a Scream movie.
Yeah,
so.
It's what you want.
Mm-hmm.
Nice.
Yeah.
Well, that sounds like fun. I mean, aside from Gladiator not holding up.
Yeah, that's all right.
Yeah. Moxie, how about you?
Not too much. Just did a fairly, you know, low-key Thanksgiving. I guess for movie banter, the one I found adorable is we watched Spider-Man Homecoming.
Okay.
And afterwards my mom's like, oh, I didn't know Spider-Man was like kind of like a dorky average dude. And I'm like, no, that is literally like Spider-Man's whole thing.
Oh, it's like the best thing about him is the fact that he has to like hold down a job and stuff.
Yeah, yeah. So she was really, really into that, which is cool.
Mm-hmm.
Other than that, my big news is I got a Steam Deck today.
Nice. Ooh. Did you get the OLED one or did
yes,
you get the OG
yes,
one? Okay, cool. Yeah.
Sick.
You've got the red sticks.
Yep. So
is that a euphemism or actual hybrid six?
Yeah, the sticks are like transparent red plastic. Looks neat.
Yeah, I have no idea how this thing works so far. Like, I know the weird thing. I'm still wrapping my mind around, like, buying a consumer product that runs Linux.
It is the year of Linux on the handheld. Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, but that's... Looking forward to getting to kind of kick the wheels and break in on Duckstream. So
yeah, that is true. I probably should have talked about that because I've been prepping for that. But it'll be a good time. You never had a Switch, right?
No.
Like this whole notion of like handheld games that are something you would actually play on another system, like that is kind of a whole new world for you.
Yep, 100%.
That's so great.
The timer is running for how long until you fall asleep playing it on your back in bed and drop it on your face.
Yeah. I am in opening Facebook, Moxie, to an opening Facebook to I have a message. I see a message from you. Oh no, I'm so sorry.
Oh, no problem. I figured between the holidays and birthday year.
Yeah, I apologize. And now you know that I that I don't check Facebook messages.
No problem. No. Yeah. Totally cool.
Yeah. Dennis, how about you?
Good. I've got a theme for my stuff this week. I started watching Scott Pilgrim Takes Off, which is the Scott Pilgrim kind of reboot / reimagining on Netflix. Mm-hmm. And then I watched both Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse.
Whoa. Mm-hmm. It's a double Spider-Man. Yeah, it's a double Spider-Man banter. Huh.
Mm-hmm. I also watched the first Andrew Garfield Spider-Man.
Homecoming. So you guys saw the same one?
No. That's Todd Holland.
The amazing Spider-Man.
The amazing Spider-Man.
I actually haven't seen any of his other than if you count, was it No Way Home or whatever?
Right.
I mean, I think that the amazing Spider-Man should win the award for Spider-Man most clearly designed to be on 3D screens.
like transparently, like sweatily so.
Oh yeah, so many shots where it's like this would be a really cool shot if it was in 3D, but it's not.
Does the Green Goblin throw pumpkin bombs like directly into the camera?
That one is it's Electro, right? Or is that the one with Lizard?
Lizard, gotcha. Dude, yeah. Whatever his Killer Croc.
I think it's isn't just like the Lizard.
Yeah. So it's just Lizard. It's Jamie Foxx.
Least inspiring.
Because, Electro.
Oh, oops.
Wow.
No, it's
such a memorable franchise.
Well, yeah, that shows you about the quality of the movie. No, so Green Goblin is in it, but the final shot of the movie is very clearly, like Spider-Man center frame up in front of the moon and shooting a web directly into the camera.
Oh, geez.
And in 3D, I could see exactly what they were going for, but in 2D, there is almost no motion of the web. Like, you can't really tell that anything is happening. And it was like, it's very climactic, but what? Oh, okay. And then the shot's over.
Did they try making this in 3D? Was that like the gimmick of it or something? Or
that it felt painfully clear that they did that. Yeah, there's the shot where he's like firing himself out of a crane and all this stuff.
Was this like hot on the heels of like Avatar, where they're like, this is the future of filmmaking, we need to get it on the 3D?
And it's Sony. This is like Sony's crack at Spider-Man, right? Mm. So
Spider-Man's been Sony for as long as it's been making Spider-Man movies.
It was Sony behind this crack at Spider-Man right when I think they were doing their big 3D push. So
gotcha.
I think they've been making cracks at Spider-Man for two decades now.
Yeah.
That doesn't even play into the theme. The theme is sequels or reboots, where I my main takeaway is, man, I really need to go back and watch the first movie.
Okay.
Did you feel that way about Across the Spider-Verse?
Across the Spider-Verse, absolutely. There's all this They try to like give a recap that catches you up, but there's all this nuance around like what makes you glitch and exactly
how so you're not saying stuff. The new one's bad necessarily. You just feel like
no. Yeah, no. I was not able to keep up with the plot.
Jumping in.
And similarly with Scott Pilgrim Takes Off. After the first episode, and then, you know, I'm about halfway through the series right now. It's like, I feel like I would be getting so much more out of this if I went back and watched the original Scott Pilgrim movie.
If it was a little bit more fresh for you. Yeah.
Yeah. And especially cause it's all the original voice cast, but that's also like 2.5 hours that I could finish the current series or go back and watch something to refresh me for. You know, one-off takeaways I might get from finishing the series. So it's a conundrum.
Now I'm having a realization that it's like, oh, people haven't watched these things dozens of times. Like the first animated Spider-Man or Scott Pilgrim.
Oh, no. Man. And they're both good. I'm really enjoying the Scott Pilgrim animation style. Mm-hmm. And it is, you know, very distinct from what Into the Spider-Verse is doing, which is absolutely a visual treat.
Yeah.
That was a ton of fun. Without spoiling anything, though, I think Across the Spider-Verse was the longest animated film ever released.
I don't know, and
you would think they could do a little bit more than set up the plot for the third movie.
Yeah.
But I got to the end, I was like, that was beautiful. Did anything actually happen?
I know what you're saying. It's weird that the action high point of the movie comes like maybe 30 minutes to an hour from the end, and then the remaining part of it is just setting up the next movie.
I mean Gwen's story was great. That was awesome. Mm-hmm. And at least kind of had its arc, but like you said, kind of even the climax of that arc felt like it came, and then the movie had an hour of setting up for the next movie still to do.
Mm-hmm. No,
man. If it remember wasn't so when pretty, movies that, were like 90 minutes long?
Oh, my that was God, great. Yeah. I miss that.
Yeah. I say bring back intermission, man. Give me a slot to pee.
Oh yeah, money. Yeah, like, totally.
You'll make more money because you know people are going.
Gonna get concessions.
Yeah, everybody wins here. Yeah. You know, the movie people can make them as long as they want.
Well, to be fair, it's the movie theaters get money for that, but the movie companies do not get money for that.
Oh, so, they can work out a deal.
For concessions or for the movie?
For concessions.
Concessions go to the house, and then ticket sales go to. I mean, there's a split, but broadly the box office is just tickets, and therefore the studios do not have incentive to put in a 10-minute intermission because that means fewer screenings during a day.
To which I would say,
which way? Like, you can't have it both ways. You can't really release these super long movies and then complain about having fewer sittings of them. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
But that's been my week or two. My Thanksgiving break was watching movies and shows.
Mm. Nice.
But yeah, sounds like I'm in good company.
Well, I didn't watch anything.
All the Spider-Man.
don't you lie to me.
I just rewatched Bob's Burgers.
I mean, that's a good one.
Yeah.
What should people be watching this weekend, though, Cole?
People this weekend should be watching Duckstream. It is the 10th annual. This is our 10th one. Charity streaming event. It's hard to even just call it just video game streaming because the West Coast folks are getting weird with it. They're doing like a Family Feud thing this year. Gary's band is going to be playing again. Our side is mostly going to be video games. If you just go to duckfeed.tv/duckstream or just go to the homepage and click the banner that's up at the top, you can see for the 10th year we are raising money for the Trans Active Gender Project, which is out of the Lewis and Clark College up there, provides education and resources for trans youth, their families, their communities.
I just love that charity's name sounds exactly like what Fox News is convinced is happening. It's the Trans Active Gender Project.
They're coming for you. No, they mostly just want to live their lives, is what I understand. So
I already got, and I'm wearing the shirt for it as well.
Oh, you got it with the 3D design. Okay,
cool. Yeah. Where do I go for that? Just duckfeed.tv?
Yeah. There's a link on the there's an image on the landing page for it that says there's a shirt.
That's sweet.
Yeah,
and there's an announcement on the Slack as well.
I'm proud of that design. It took forever to figure out how to fake 3D and 2D in Photoshop. So we're taking donations, and all of our Twitch revenue for December and all of the store revenue for December is going to be going into the total for that. That is going to be sent out. So I'm looking forward to it. It's a good time. My main thing that I'm going to be streaming is the Half-Life 2 Chaos mod, where people in chat can vote on what effect to apply to me playing Half-Life 2.
It's just all head crabs all the time.
There's not so much like with head crabs, but like to give you an example of like some things. So I tested this just to see that it would be viable. There are commands that'll come up that are just like as benign as like everything changes color. There's a condition called surprise reforestation that just fills the entire area you're in with trees. There's the floor is lava, so if you're not standing on an object, you're going to be taking damage. There's a double barrel shotgun, which the shotgun will shoot two exploding barrels.
That's excellent.
It's a bunch of dumb shit like that. It's going to be real stupid. And we're having, oh good,
I was gonna say, East Coast getting weird with it in game, West Coast getting weird with it out of game.
Yes. Yeah. And then we're going to be having multiplayer times with folks from the level here. And also, I'm going to throw in some Jackbox there because that is really easy to play while I'm eating.
It's also funny to promote this on this because this comes out the day that it starts.
It's literally the day. Yeah. So if you're getting this in the morning or if you're hearing it over the weekend, be sure to tune in.
Do it now.
Yeah. And we announced it before, but this is the call to action. There's no time for you to forget to do it because it's right now. Just go do it. Tune in. If you can't give, we understand. Hang out in the chat, spread the word, keep us company. It is a big fun event. It lasts long enough to kind of form its own like pocket culture, with its own references that live and die. And then when people join in, they're like, okay, I will start the stream after a night of Portland doing stuff and people are making jokes that I don't understand. So
to be fair, I understand very little about Portland.
Yes.
I think that's the point. That's what they're going for.
So it'll be a good time. That's at the Duckfeed Twitch channel if you want to subscribe and get notifications for when that goes up. Or if you want to go and check out the information on the landing page, once again, that is duckfeed.tv/duckstream. Yes, thank you for prompting me on that, Ben. We should talk about video games, and I think to do that, we should do the regular kind of show, What with the Grind, the Multiplayer, and the Unboss, and why don't we get started with...
The Grind,
where we talk about the games we have been playing over the last period of time or so. Let's see, who has something new?
I have something new.
Okay, Ben.
Wait, do you want a thumb war for it, Moxie?
No, I'm good. Go for it.
All right, but I got two old ones that I want to get out of the way first.
Okay.
So this is like a bait and switch. I in the last 2 weeks, I finished up both Spider-Man 2 and Alan Wake 2.
Okay.
I have pretty much lukewarm things to say about both of them, they're both technically great games and are very like pretty and well polished and by and large aren't too buggy or anything like that, at least on console.
Mm-hmm.
But both are very like conservative in the storytelling and and I don't know, are very like unmemorable. Like I'm probably going to forget about like the plot lines and the characters, the side characters and everything like that in a matter of weeks. So kind of a bittersweet experience, I suppose.
No. You say not very buggy, but then this video you posted of you fighting enemies as a box and then suddenly turning into like a hentai splooge monster.
So this is the one exception for Spider-Man. I shared this in the backstage. I completed the game, 100% of the game, which isn't too hard to do. It's not like a crazy task to do. Like there's a pretty small number of side quests throughout the entire world, so it's pretty easy to knock out. I had a rare bug in the game towards the end of it where as you're unlocking costumes, it did not load the variants for one of them. Mm-hmm. So instead gives you the default box cube that is a placeholder for where Spider-Man should be. And so you can swing around the map as a cube and fight people as a cube. And it is goofy. So I shared a video of that in the backstage for people.
What's crazy is they actually reference this in Across the Spider-Verse. I assume just because they referenced everything in there, it felt like so.
Yeah.
Oh, is there a box in the headquarters and Across the Spider-Verse?
I think Dennis is lying to us.
No, there was at least one box, and who are you to say?
Okay,
I mean they have a lot of Spider-Men there, so
yeah.
There's a Peter Park car there, so.
So point of order is it like attorneys general? Are they Spider-Mans? The spiders mans?
No, we talked about this before because the spider's man or the man spider, I forget. No.
Oh,
yes,
no.
I don't know.
Yeah, man spider's a different character.
The world may never know.
Yeah.
But that clip aside, both this game and Alan Wake are very stable games, like in very unbuggy, I would say.
Mm-hmm.
For the most part, there's just very minor cases where there might be small bugs. That said, I do want to go back to the points I was making where it's like, both in Alan Wake and both in Spider-Man, it's like, and maybe Cole, you could comment on Alan Wake at least. I feel little to no emotion for like any of the side characters at all. Like the game, even though these games like feel a lot like Naughty Dog type games, they do not follow that sort of game in as far as making you care about the characters and mm-hmm. like giving you like stakes and stuff like that. Point for like Alan Wake is like his wife's character or Saga's family. They're introduced as like these like emotional like anchor points or whatever, but you never actually see the characters until like far later, and they never really give you a reason to care about these characters or to inform you of why the main character cares about these characters.
Yeah, I don't know. It's hard to talk about it without spoiling things, but
sure.
There are some characters who reappear from Alan Wake 1, mm-hmm. and specifically the old gods of Asgard. Like I thought the stuff that was done with their story, like was kind of cool. Mm-hmm. It is very hard. It is not a game that I think is either trying to tug at your heart. It's not trying to tug your heart, and that's very good because I don't think that they could succeed if they wanted to. I mm-hmm. think that what they're aiming for is kind of an oh shit spectacle and mm-hmm. Kind of a certain degree of like, oh, I didn't expect them to try and do something that, for lack of a better word, weird with the way that the way that this reality works, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I guess the other complaint I have about both games is there needed to be a bit more playtesting in some of the like combat sequences in both games where I think both times there were sequences towards the latter half of the game where you'd be stuck in a situation where it was very hard to not instantly die in a couple situations. And we'd have to like reload the game. And that was like a bit annoying. Could just have been something that I ran into in particular and maybe mm-hmm. other people didn't have the problem with it.
The boss fights in Alan Wake 2 are dog shit. I don't like them at all.
Yeah, that is another point too. Even though these aren't buggy games, like with Alan Wake in particular, there's multiple times where you get into a case where you run out of ammo and like you are stuck in a no-win situation, and so you just have to let yourself die, both with like the normal ghost or with like the boss ghost.
Yeah.
and that feels pretty bad. And it's like, I hate comparing every game to like Portal or Portal 2 or something like that, but it's like, it's always a bummer when you get to a boss fight and it's like the only innovation that's there is they just made it harder, like just change the stats of the boss.
Yeah.
And like, so you just have to fight harder or conserve ammo harder is the path to victory. So anyway, so kind of lukewarm reviews on both of those. I think they both games also try and end with like stingers, taunting like a future, but both times I'm just like, oh, I don't care. I think I'm done with the game now. So
yeah,
kind of a letdown, I guess. I don't know. Your mileage may vary. Alan Wake, at least, is going for something creative narratively, even though they've already done this, like this sort of take. So I do appreciate those types of things, but like the games themselves and the gameplay seem very like vanilla kind of. The innovation is like flashlight fighting, but that's like not a huge innovation. What they try and do with like the board and the mind place, it's a cool idea, but then there's no like there's no stakes for it. There's no like in-game implementation for it.
No.
So it's something that kind of falls flat. Spider-Man is at least fun to like play an open world game if you have that sort of itch. So sure. Yeah, sure.
And you get to swing around like they're kinesthetically, that is. Yeah.
Yeah. So all that to say is had two kind of meh experiences with these, but the third game that I've been playing this last week is the game that's been popping up on Twitch, and I think possibly we might play, spoiler, is Lethal Company.
I want to hear about this. I have seen a lot of context-free videos of gameplay from this on Twitter. And it's funny because of the way people are reacting when things happen. But I don't necessarily understand like the structure of what's going on with it. I'm excited to play it with y'all, but
Yeah. And I haven't checked the development size or something.
It's one person.
That's what I was assuming. Yeah. This is in early access at Steam, but this is scratching the itch that like Among Us did back in the day. A little bit of like what Phasmo did. Basically, it is a you necessarily need to play with other people. It is an online co-op game. It has a gameplay loop similar to Phasmophobia, where the idea is it's this like ultra capitalistic sort of structure where you are people that are drop shipping onto planets to pick up scrap from the area and bring it back to sell. And you have a financial quota you need to make every 3 days. And if you do not succeed that, then you die and your run is over, essentially. So, and the scrap that you're picking up is very like mundane things. Like,
so there's not a pension plan, I'm understanding.
Oh, for this career? Yeah, the pension is death, I think, probably. Yeah. the quota keeps raising each time, too. So it's like, it very much feels like a battle that you cannot win. However, there is a high ceiling for like perfect play. So you're in this like box that lands on a planet. You land at the beginning of the day. You have a very quick amount of time before the day is over. It starts getting dark. Monsters come out in the dark and it make it incredibly hard to survive. So basically you are trying to find scrap instantly. In each map, there's a facility that is nearby, and that's kind of where you want to head towards. And the facility is where, by and large, most of the scrap is. There can be some valuables on the map otherwise, but there's not typically. So the main gameplay loop is to run to the facility, enter the facility, try and find scrap, carry it, and then bring it back to the ship and drop it off. And you can make maybe two or three runs before it starts getting too dangerous, either outside or inside, before you either die or you have to like run back to the ship and call it. There is a failure condition where if all four people die, all of your scrap during this entire period of time is gone, like instantly gone, which is almost like a loss pretty much for the run. But to kind of combat this is before you drop on any planet, there's a store that you can buy items through, similar to like Phasmophobia. You can buy flashlights so you can see better in the facility. You can buy walkie-talkies, somewhat critical if you're doing multiplayer, so that you can communicate with one another. The voice chat is very good in this game. Mm-hmm. If you don't have a walkie-talkie, you can hear people that are like nearby. If there are objects that make sound, like a clown horn, which is a item, or a boombox, which you might buy, You can hear those sounds from farther away, and so you can kind of hear that. But the walkie-talkies are, like, golden. You can hear those, but they do have a power supply that you have to recharge on the ship. So if you're out too long, they might go dead, and then you're kind of on your own.
Nice.
In addition, the ship itself is really interesting. Most of the commands that you're doing are operated through a terminal that's on the ship. And so you're literally typing in, like, store. It'll take you to the store menu. Type in what item you want to buy, and they'll deliver it to you. But you can do some other commands, like you can do scan while you're on the ship. And it tells you how many items are on the planet still and what the total value is, to try and encourage you to keep, like, scavenging, or to let you know that you've gotten everything and you can head out.
And like one person can stay in the box and like watch the computer terminals and like communicate, say like, hey, go here, hey, watch out for this kind of thing.
Yes, because yeah. One of the other functions on the ship is there is a camera that will follow people. Mm-hmm. And there's and this you can either operate through the console, or there's these tiny little buttons by the screen that you can change. You can change who you're following, and the map that you see of them, it shows both items that are nearby them and it shows monsters that are nearby them. So this is really helpful for people who are in the facility. You can be like, oh, hey, go to one room to your left. There's like three items in there. Find those and bring those back. Mm-hmm. Or you can be like, oh, there's a monster to your right. Don't go in that room. Like, stay away from that.
Yeah.
Are you safe while you're viewing these things?
Since you're viewing it from your ship, you are theoretically safe there, especially if you have the ship doors closed. But that's not to say that later monsters cannot open the doors, come in, and kill you. So there's a certain, you know, if it gets late enough in the day, yes, you are not safe anywhere, more or less. Yeah. But yeah.
And I maybe you've said this, I missed it. Are you armed? Is this like a shooty thing or just straight up running?
Yeah, so, a shovel.
Yeah, you can be armed, but everything costs money in the game. So yes, you can have a shovel, but it costs, you know, $60. So if you want to buy it, you can. But even that's not like a silver bullet. It is a shovel. So you just you whack things with it, and it might stun some of the bigger things, but I have been in situations running backwards and whacking things with a shovel, and it just eats me up. So it is by no means a perfect catch-all. In fact, I would say that having somebody communicating with you is far more effective than having a weapon to try and use to fight something off.
No.
You can later buy like a stun gun too, but I'm not sure how effective it is because I've never got enough money to do that. Mm-hmm. And then there's signs you can pick up, like stop signs, yield signs, and you can use those as improvised weapons as well to try and attack things. The monsters and the facilities are both seemingly randomly generated. There's a random seed each time you drop off. So those are randomly populated. They feel a lot like In the Back Rooms sort of thing, where mm-hmm. it's just these like maze like hallways at certain points.
Yeah.
And it's very easy to lose your bearings. Every facility has a back door, like a fire escape entrance, that you can use. So sometimes it might make sense to do that if the entryway is blocked by a monster or something like that. Hmm. But yeah, it is a lot of oh shit moments, and then hearing people's comms cut off abruptly, and then realizing that they're dead.
Yeah.
They're all the items, the way that you can upgrade things, you can upgrade the ship that you're on as well. And those have been like game changers. One unlockable is a loud horn for the ship, where if you do that, if somebody's trying to come back to the ship, but it's really dark, it's really hard to find your way back. Mm. So hearing like a loud fog horn is like can give people direction to go. And that's really valuable. There's also a teleporter, which is you can teleport bodies back on the ship, but they leave all their items behind, but can still be valuable if like somebody is like surrounded by monsters. You can get them back to safety at the expense of the items that they have. Or even if they're dead, you can teleport their bodies back to the ship and you get $5 for that. So it's not terrible.
Or use in the jumpsuits. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So basically the appeal of this game and the fun of it is like seeing the random like scary monsters that are in each of these facilities. It's crazy because it's all very jank since it's early access. Like the big things that kill you, I think they call them dogs at night, are mm-hmm. just these It's kind of like the Langoliers, if you've ever read that. Just giant things that are all teeth. But there's like ways to try and navigate them. Like some creatures rely on sight, others rely on like sound. So you can try and like distract them or get around them that way if you want to do some like expert play. I haven't really got to that level yet. Mm-hmm. And there's just like a lot of like fun moments that are like really well designed for this multiplayer experience. There's one thing where there's like beehives where the bees can attack you. But there's a way the hives themselves are valuable though. So it's a kind of sought after item. So you can do this sort of co-op tactic where you can have one person distract the bees and run away from them, but have them chase him. Oh. And the other person can pick up the hive and take it back to the ship.
Get the delicious, delicious honey.
That's right.
One person this does needs the to Benny be the Hill, the other does the Pooh Bear.
Yeah. This needs to be the last thing you do though, because the bees will chase that, and we've had things where they come onto the ship and kill everyone. So you need to do that in the GTFO. But anyway, very fun game. The maps themselves, like the moons that you go to, are also dynamic, where sometimes it'll be raining, sometimes it'll be foggy, sometimes it'll be flooded, sometimes it'll be an eclipse. And these all have like minor different effects on how the map is and how the gameplay is. So it's amazing though to play this sort of game after playing the other ones that I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Because it's a single person making them, but it is cohesive enough and well designed enough where it is a very unique experience, a unique gameplay experience you're having. And so it's almost like Whiplash playing that, going from these other games where it's like very safe gameplay, very like tried and true gameplay. There's not a lot of chances, but then there's also not a lot of like creative like fun in those other games. It's not to like completely dog on those and say that there's not any sort of value in them, but it is like Whiplash going between the two different games.
I mean, and it's not just like, hey, this is, you know, outclassing these, you know, relatively conventional from a play standpoint, you know, larger titles. It's not just that. Like, it is the most played game on Steam right now. Like, Call of Duty game just launched, and this is doing more, pulling more numbers than that one is.
Yeah, I could see that.
I mean, can we really say that a Call of Duty game ever launches or finishes at this point? Just a continuous stream.
Not really. Regardless, it is still impressive that a product this modest, just by just by sheer pluck and inventiveness, and also luck, right? You know, like this. You know, that is thrown in. You can't take for granted that something's going to catch fire like this, right?
Yeah. But it's very fun. I'm excited to play it with you all too, because I think this is an excellent game to not only play but also see people play.
Yeah.
So it's good for audiences, I think.
Yeah. Get some of that. It's got like the appeal of like unpredictable slapstick, but also streamer screamer kind of thing, you know?
Yes.
Yeah.
Are you guys practicing your screams?
No.
I'm practicing my ability to jump and not fall to my death in this game.
Oh, nice. I'm happy to hear that. I'm happy to hear details about Lethal Company, because again, all that I had was out of context videos that looked very entertaining, but it was unclear what is going on.
One warning I will have about this game is I think that this game does rely on like the novelty value of like how you don't know what's going to be around the corner. Like, since it's the monsters are so, there's a high number of different monsters and they're all kind of have their own rule set. But I can see how this game would get pretty dry later on once you've like figured out all the details and you know all the patterns and stuff like that. But for now, it's really great and it's a very original gift. So
yeah, nice. Lethal Company.
Mm-hmm.
Cool.
That's all I got.
Moxie, sounded like you had one as well.
Yeah. So I picked up Dave the Diver.
Okay. Controversial.
Yes. It will be coming up in my do we call it the end boss anymore?
Yes, yeah.
Have any of you guys played this before? Yes.
Ben has. I have
not. Yeah. I got to the end more or less.
Oh, nice. I am in chapter 2, which I have no idea if that actually means anything, but
How far have you gone, or how deep have you gone? It's just like Subnautica.
I've just starting to get into the depths where you need your flashlight.
Gotcha.
And then just unlocked night diving.
Oh, cool. All right. Yeah.
So to tell people, this is sort of a two-part game. On the one hand, it's a 2D diving game where you're going around and attempting to spearfish fish.
Or shoot fish.
Yes. while not getting eaten by said fish. And managing your oxygen. Mm-hmm. One of the interesting things here is that your oxygen is actually effectively your HP. So, you know, when you get bitten by a shark or whatever, you don't, you know, actually lose health. You lose some of your oxygen.
I mean, there's oxygen in your blood, right?
That is true. Yeah. That is factually true.
Oh, no, my hemoglobin.
From what I've seen so far, it really, get back to that. And then the other half of the game is running a sushi restaurant, which is a combination of, one playing almost like a root beer tapper type game, you know, kind of a run around and try to serve people and, you know, not have any of the customers wait too long.
Like Diner Dash. Yeah.
Yes, exactly. But then the bigger element of it is actually putting together your menu. So, you know, you have various, the various fish you've caught, and each of them has a certain value, you know, how much it costs when someone buys them from you, and then, you know, how much they enjoy it. But what makes it complicated is most of the more expensive recipes will include either fish that are harder to get or rarer, or fish where you get less, you know, they take up more inventory space for less servings.
Mm-hmm.
And so a lot of the game is basically balancing, you know, figuring out how you want to approach setting up your menu.
Can I add one thing as well?
Yeah.
It's also complicated by you can upgrade like fish to a higher quality, or like the recipe to a higher quality. So it's also ambiguous, like, should I serve these 50 fish now, or should I commit those to upgrading the menu so that in the future I'll get a higher price when I serve these fish to customers?
Exactly. And then that then in turn plays into the fishing portion, because each time you dive, the area is randomly generated. However, there's consistent rules about the way things are set up. So, for example, in the shallow water, there is a on the right hand side, somewhere there will always be a shark that if you capture it, you can get a very high high cost dish out of it. So there's only one of those each time you dive. So it's a question of also balancing, like, how common are these different fish on the map, and how easy is it for me to get to?
I also want to throw out, I don't think it's randomly generated, the maps. There's like maybe three different areas.
Is that the case?
Yeah. And they might be like pseudo randomly populated. Like something may or may not be there, but certain things are like always there in the different maps.
Okay. That makes sense.
It definitely, but it takes a long time before you kind of like see the commonality. It definitely feels randomly generated when you first play.
Yeah, I couldn't tell if it was random or if, or what you're saying, or if maybe it was like the, was it kind of the puzzle piece thing where there's a couple of non-randomly generated things that they plug together? I'm not sure.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it's like three different options and it's like the map is static. It might be randomly, pseudo-randomly like populated, but yeah.
So that's kind of the core gameplay loop. However, what then really makes it interesting is there's all sorts of, side events. I think one of the weirdest I've had so far is there's a kind of satirical version of whatever the environmentalist group that attacks the whaling ships.
Greenpeace, possibly.
I don't recall, but they literally come after you with grenade launchers.
Okay.
Oh boy.
Yeah, there is a surprising amount of gunfighting in this game about fishing. ridiculous fishing really needs to, needs to talk to these people.
They were definitely going for the American audience.
Yes. Which is funny because it's a Korean game.
Mm-hmm.
But I think one of my favorite things is there are some amazing cutscenes in this game.
Mm-hmm.
So your sushi chef is this dude who... It's just super into like the way of the fish and like kind of parodies the stereotypical like, I don't know, action movie like samurai, zen type thing, except about sushi.
Okay.
So whenever you like research a new recipe or have him upgrade a recipe, there's this over the top cutscene where it's just, just like old school samurai movie, him like sharpening his sushi knife and then meditating and then like pulling it out with like the audible zhink and just the whole thing. It's amazing. Similarly, you have a anime nerd that builds all of your weapons. Mm-hmm. And so whenever you build a new weapon, it does like, an anime style, like, super produced cutscene, with theme music and everything.
It's got like Palico vibes.
Exactly. That is, I don't know, at least so far, I'm really enjoying this game, just kind of what its sense of humor is and its mix of kind of solid gameplay and story with, also not being afraid to be silly.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Nice. Yeah. I mean, this has sounded appealing to me since I first heard Ben talk about it, like just that particular loop and running the business kind of thing. Those two sides feeding into the other. Yeah.
Yeah. I think the funniest thing is that, condiments are actually the, most difficult to get ingredient. So it's just like, this is apparently in some sort of dystopian world where the most precious resources are salt and soy sauce.
Mayonnaise, yeah.
Huh. Nice. Yeah. I don't have any questions about it. It just sounds cool. I don't know if it's indie, but we'll talk about that.
Ooh. Ooh. Foreshadowing.
Foreshadowing.
Spears fired.
Yeah. Did you have anything else?
That's all I got.
Cool. Dennis, how about you?
Yeah, so I've been playing two games. One is new to me completely. The other is a return. But again, they share a theme, which is I want to like these.
Okay.
And they just don't click. So the game that I returned to is Valheim.
Okay.
Hey.
And yeah, I had a bunch of friends that started up a server. And the concept is like, all right, we're all going to start out and get kind of leveled up to stability. Everyone's going to be able to like stake a claim, and then it will be a PvP server with safe areas.
Oh.
And the like in a sentence concept is we're going to get up to summer camp hijinks rather than anything too brutal. Which is like, hey, let's steal this guy's boat and take it halfway across the world or what have you. Just mess with each other.
Yeah.
Which sounds so fun. And Valheim is totally a game that could facilitate that once you get to stability, leveled up. Getting there is a grind.
Okay.
And I have, every time I've played Valheim, I've played on a server with other people who were slightly ahead of me, and so could kind of like pass along all their gear as hand-me-downs.
Right, right.
And so I've had the best leg up to getting into the game possible, and still just cannot find the fun. Mm. I don't know. It just, maybe it's because it's like, oh, hey, I've got bronze armor to start. That's nice. Someone just wasn't using their backup set, so I got it. Maybe the fun is in getting to that point. I don't know. Mm-hmm. But, you know, after the 300 millionth tree chopped and, you know, just running back and forth, I can't, I don't know, it's just not fun to me.
Yeah, especially if everybody's having fun around you.
Yeah, it's so, you know, I'm a real believer that fun is a zero-sum game.
If they're having fun, I'm not.
Yeah, if someone else is having fun, then I am not.
Right.
Have you built a house or a base yet?
Someone had a house built that they weren't using, so I got into
just
that.
Hermit crabbed in.
I like hermit crabbed everything in the game. No, primarily what I've done is I kind of went and did a little exploring, started just jumping and running and chopping to get my skills up. And you know, the first boss had already been beaten, so unless I intentionally resummon it, don't have to worry about that. I decided I wanted to practice with a shield, and I literally spent an entire day, just the one little goblin guy came up to me and I just kept on blocking his attacks, block. And like, that's how you level everything up in the game.
Can you imagine how annoying that must be for the goblin, though?
Yeah. I really should have let him go at the end instead of killing him, just as an honorable thing to do. But yeah,
level up your empathy.
But I just, yeah. I don't know. I just cannot find a single thing that like excites me to do in the game. Even with the promise of like, oh, hey, we're going to do this like fun high concept thing, hanging out with each other later on. I just can't click with it. So,
it sounds like it's time to cut bait.
Yeah. That's pretty much what I've done. It's still installed. And mostly cause you know, my friends are still playing and I am on the text chain where they talk about what they're doing. And it's like, how do I let them down easy?
That sounds like a miserable experience.
Oh, Valheim. Yeah. I should love Valheim and I don't, it's just not meant to be. I try it again. It's like every couple of years, someone will convince me to try pickles and I categorically do not like pickles, but I always get cajoled into trying them again. It's like, I remembered how much I don't like that. Okay. It's been a couple of years. That's Valheim for me.
Can I try and defend it a little bit?
You could try.
All right. It is. I will admit that it's a very hard game to get into because they don't really tell you anything, and it's very like hands off sort of. Mm-hmm. And it is like, I think the only reason I made it through is because there were the people I was playing with like had already played it and they knew where to go and knew what to do. And so like anytime there was doubt of like, well, what should I do from here? They're like, oh, well, we should do this and get this item and then do this. And it's like, okay, yeah, let's try it out. But I guess that's like two big hurdles to get over is like, first is like just understanding how to build stuff. Cause I think a major fun in the game is like being like, okay, what kind of base do I want to build? And how do I want to like, I don't know, make it so I could do X, Y, or Z in this world. And like kind of like coming up with your own objectives is like a big part of it, but mm-hmm. it's really hard to do that if you don't know how all the things work at all. So that's like one hurdle. And then like the other hurdle is like anytime you enter a new biome, you're already back like almost like behind square one where it's right. like you have
yes.
you have to like somehow cheat out getting the items you need from there so you can upgrade your stuff really quick so that you can actually be competitive in that biome and not just like insta-die. And so that can be difficult as well.
I had the first time I played, I got through mountains. So it's like, you know, your starting area, the Black Forest, the mountains, and then there's like a some kind of plains biome after that. Am I remembering right?
I think you're skipping a swamp, but yeah.
Oh yeah, no, I did the swamp too. So yeah, I got through all that into the plains. And say it was the same thing though. Is like I was. The person I was playing with was cool with like resummoning all the bosses to take them back down.
Yeah.
And that was kind of fun. You know, some of them we kind of cheesed, some of them we just took straight up. But I don't know. It just got to the point. It's like, well, if I don't, you know, I'm not super hyper excited about this next boss fight. What is fun to do?
No. Yeah. Cause I will say the most fun I had in the game was building a spiral staircase house on top of a mountain. And that, but it's like nothing, you know, there's no, nothing that was like in the game. It was just kind of creating your own fun. So,
yeah.
See, in these sorts of games, I always just build wherever they're like preset, like little shack thing you build on your first night with wherever you chop down, and then just never build anything else.
Oh no!
Just live simply, you know.
I mean, you know, if it doesn't help me kill goblins, what's the point?
Yeah. So that's Valheim. It's yeah, I don't, not for me, I guess is the conclusion I have to come to, regretfully.
Yeah. That's fair.
Speaking of cutting bait on games, the other game that I tried and wanted to like but didn't was Sea of Thieves.
Okay. Finally, oh, yeah. Did you play with other people?
I did, yeah. It was with three other people, so we were a crew of four. The other people weren't far in the game, but they like had a ship and had a, I guess you can now with the latest season make guilds or something. I wasn't around for the seasons before, but apparently this latest season is a big upgrade in social capacities and everything. But I signed in, got spawned into the ship, and just spent the entire time confused and bored. Like, oh, we're sailing, we're looking for this, we've got this treasure map that we're following, but I can't see the treasure map. I'm not the one holding it. And they keep on saying, oh, check southwest and northeast and south and all this stuff. And, just trying to look around and see what's around me on the boat. So I'm up in the crow's nest. And every time I have to like hit a button, select from a menu to go over to my compass and then switch back over to my telescope and look through that. And all the slots were numbered. So I was like, oh, these are probably like quick bar items. I can just hit 8 instead of, you know, opening up the menu and going to number 8. That didn't work for me. And I don't know if it was supposed to, it didn't, but so it was just super clunky swapping between my compass and the spyglass. just to try to get my bearings. And then, you know, they like, just as I'm like, oh, I think I might understand the direction that we're trying to go, they decide to, oh, well, no, there's this island we want to hit now. So they all jump out and they're swimming around that. I did the same thing. There was like a shipwreck, and I went down and looked at the shipwreck, and there wasn't anything to interact with in the shipwreck. So I came up. I climbed on, I guess it was the other half of the shipwreck, and then turned around. And there was a skeleton holding an explosive barrel right behind me.
Oh, yeah.
Which killed me instantly.
Yeah, that'll do it.
Trying to make it like Minecraft.
Yeah. Guys.
Oogie skeletons.
Yeah. Guys, I don't think this game is for me. it was probably a half hour of playing. But man, yeah, I just, it felt like everyone on the boat knew what was going on or what was supposed to be happening except for me. And like, I didn't want to interrupt everyone's flow and be like, wait, everyone, you know, stop and wait until I figure out what we're doing to do it.
For what it's worth, I think Sea of Thieves is a great game, but it's definitely a game you have to read the wiki some beforehand.
Aha, yes.
Like, for example, one of the main ways you navigate and figure out what's going on is watching the clouds.
What?
Oh. So, like, certain things in the game, like monsters, a pirate ship, stuff like that, will always have certain weather effects over top of them. So that's how, if you're like in the middle of the ocean, you look and see like, oh, over there is, you know, something I either want to go towards or avoid.
Yeah. Huh. That's, I mean, that's cool. But there was no on-ramp for that.
Yeah. Like I said, like, this is very much this is kind of the Dark Souls approach to, you definitely need your Sherpa or Wiki.
Yeah. Or it's even just like they were talking about, oh, I need someone to adjust the sails. And I was right there at the sails and I'm like looking around like, okay, what do I do to adjust it? Maybe. And it's like, oh no. Now I'm on the ladder to the crow's nest. I had no idea how to properly interact with anything. So this sounds like Dennis complaining and being grumpy about games. I guess that's kind of what this turned into. But
did you do the tutorial?
No.
Yeah. Hey, Dennis.
Yeah. I wanted to get in and play with my friends.
I think maybe you didn't set yourself up for success there, buddy.
Maybe the caveat. Yeah. So maybe I'll come back around and try it again.
Maybe.
It wasn't for me in that moment. All right. But I went back to my safe place. That's Sea of Thieves. I don't know if anyone else has commentary or questions on that. Not that I could answer them.
I mean, I think it's fair though. If the game doesn't isn't intuitively like you can't pick it up and understand what's going on.
It is not an
intuitive game.
And I'm for both games because I'm thinking of Valheim as well. But yeah,
sure.
I don't think you're in the wrong or anything. Like a game should be easily understandable or intuitive to play.
But. Yeah, and I think maybe I just got dropped into the wrong slice of that. So yeah, I'm playing up how frustrated I was, but it's just like, yeah, I couldn't find, I thought I was all excited both times. Cause I'm like, oh yeah, I'll have a new jam to talk about on the level. It's be great. Mm-hmm. And then it's like, I can't say anything, intelligent on these.
Did you at least spend some time playing the hurdy-gurdy?
No, but I did talk in a pirate voice.
Okay. Well, that's the good.
So I feel like I gave it a good shot.
Yeah.
So after this, I got back into my box, went back to my safe space of Trackmania. And they actually have they just hit their 20-year anniversary from the first one.
Oh, wow.
Oh, my God.
And to celebrate, they released the first time. So the latest reboot is started in 2020. So the first time in almost 4 years, they released a new type of car. So the entirety of Trackmania, the latest one, is one car. Although previous games have had different car types, usually themed by a locale or a type of surface. And now they release a new, it's like a Jeep. They call it the Snow Car. But it's like a big heavy-duty Jeep that you can drive, which has completely different physics from the first car, and just, you know, opens up a whole bunch of new options for racing, for track building, for, you know, all kinds of hijinks. And best of all, there is a simple item you can put into your levels or your tracks as you're building them that switches the car type from one to the other.
So like as you're driving, just suddenly
it's like you're in a Jeep now.
Does it at least do like a cartoony, like your car like inflates or something into a Jeep?
It does like a respawning character flash.
Okay.
So they'll be like, bop, 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 and you're there. If you're driving in water at the moment you change, it's funny, each time it does a flash, it splashes in the water. So yeah, I mean, it is silly and crazy and absolutely a ton of fun. Counterintuitively, the Jeep, the new Snow Car, turns on a dime pretty much no matter what speed it's going.
Interesting.
So where the Indy car, or, you know, the main, they call it the stadium car, but the main car, you know, will drift and, you know, the faster you're going, the wider your radius is, it feels like, you know, actually driving something. The Jeep, just like you can be going full tilt and just hard left and turn pretty much at a right angle, which is super disorienting, just very, very counterintuitive for someone that spent 3 years building up muscle memory for a completely different car.
You're just playing Tron now.
Yeah, basically, yeah. And that is, you know, that is kind of the basics. It also is way less affected, like you might expect, by like rough terrain. So if you go over penalty grass or you know, kind of areas that are meant to be quote unquote off the track, it'll take much less slowdown.
Can you rainbow road it?
Oh yeah, and a lot of tracks are kind of designed around you doing just that. Which is fantastic. I assume you mean like kind of throw yourself off the side and
yep.
Yeah, reach a new point. Yep, there are definitely tracks designed with that in mind. And then the final thing, which is also counterintuitive, is the snow car has absolutely no traction on ice. Yeah. So tell me how that works. Okay. I don't know. But it is, you know, like if you hit an ice patch, you can spin to face literally any direction. It will not affect your momentum at all.
It's a snow car.
Yes. Yes, that's exactly it. Yeah, so there's, you know, that's the big new thing in Trackmania. It feels like an entirely new game. You know, they introduce new roadblocks or new things to build with pretty regularly, but this is the first time there's been something on this level of change, and it's just a ton of fun to mess with.
Yeah.
So I know. Yeah. I'm certain you've discussed this before, but does this have a level editor and like a good way to share levels?
Oh yeah, the game is entirely built around that.
Yeah.
That is its thing. And it both inside the game and then like supporting websites, like it is hyper supportive of mods and plugins and all this stuff. But man, let me look at my statistics here. Yeah, I have 1,260 hours in the game.
Holy shit.
I have built 503 tracks.
Wow.
I thought there was an hour breakdown by type, like section of the game, where like your time in racing, your time in creative, but I can't find it. Last time I checked, it was basically equally split between racing and mapping. Yeah, the fun of the game is very much on both sides.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's just cool to see Trackmania kind of thriving in this live service format, and they're doing it right in a way that a lot of other games are getting wrong right now. So kudos to them.
And so to be clear, when you're making a map now, you determine what the starting car is for the person, right? They don't choose?
Correct. The way you would choose snow car is you would just drop the little transformer object onto the starting block.
Got it.
And so it's kind of funny because it will show the basic car right up until the lights go green, and then immediately your physics and the visuals of the car transfers over to the truck.
Yeah, that's cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so ending on a bright spot, that is me this week.
That's good. Happy that there was some redemption there for you.
Yeah.
For me, I've got three VR games.
Ooh, all right. Ooh.
Okay. Mostly because my non-VR play has been assignment, but I just over time these are kind of short run games a little bit, and only one of them is relatively new, but I'll just go ahead and get in and talk about them. The first one is called Super Hypercube. It's actually from came out on the PlayStation VR in 2016. And it never came to Oculus because, it's not native to Oculus, or Quest, Meta, whatever the thing is. Fuck. it's not native to any of those, because the developer didn't want to publish for Facebook or Oculus, because of like political stuff. So you've got to buy it on Steam, and then use the Oculus Air Link to play. Basically using, playing it remotely, which works perfectly fine. This is a puzzle game, is what this is. It's really ingenious because it is all abstract. You are looking at and dealing with shapes And it starts out where you've got a cube in front of you, and that cube and you are rushing down this long techno hallway. And at the end, there is a wall that has a hole in it that is just a cube. You don't have to do anything. You don't have to rotate anything. It'll pass through. When you pass through the wall, another cube is added on. So now you have a 2x1, and the hole at the end of the hole in the wall that's coming toward you next. Well, now you've got to rotate it, and then you get through there, and then another cube is added, and then repeating on and on, making more complex shapes that you are twisting. You are like trying to get this abstract shape made out of a bunch of cubes stuck together into the proper silhouette to go through these holes as it gets faster and faster, and that is the that is the whole game.
The whole game.
Can you change the placement of cubes after you've placed them initially?
No. They're just added on. And so,
what are the controls for the rotation? Can you just rotate it two different ways or three?
You can rotate it three ways. So you can spin it around using the left. Basically, this is hard because I'm trying to conceptualize a 3D object and turn it into words for you. You can turn it on every axis, basically.
Yeah.
So, you know, up, down, left, or right, and then the shoulder buttons that you have on the controllers will turn it clockwise or counterclockwise. So, you know, for any of the upcoming walls, you've got six possible orientations that could be the one that you have to work with.
Seems really complicated.
but also four different like angles that it could be in, right?
Yeah. So you know what I mean.
And two solutions at least. Yeah.
it's one of those things where me describing it, I'm doing a very poor job of it. But if you watch a video of it, like on the Steam page, you can kind of see the object itself is right in front of you and will by virtue of the fact that the hole in the wall that is rushing toward you is at the center. Like you've got to look around the object to see what the upcoming shape is going to be.
I was
going to
ask about that.
Yeah.
It looks super awkward because the only way to see around is like to lean, which uses VR, but also feels like, imagine you're holding a Rubik's cube up, you know, 3 inches from your face.
Yeah.
And the only, like, you have to move your head to look around instead of just dropping your hand slightly.
So the cube is a little ways away from you. And getting a sense by like ducking around it on either side, as the shape gets more complex, it is giving you information about like what this thing actually is, you know, without you needing to go through all of the rotations for it. Without needing to go through all the rotations, just to kind of get a sense of what the shape is to match up what's coming down the pike. Yeah.
Okay.
It's super simple. Like in play, you can mess up. And if you do not line it up correctly, and one of the cubes hits the edge, you know, basically, it will be the whole shape will be forced through, and blocks will be knocked off as it goes. And if you lose a certain number of blocks, then you know, then you're done.
I like that. That's really nice. It like varying degrees of penalties based on how bad you fuck it up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So this is one that I had heard about a while back, and I saw that it was on sale and grabbed it. And it's real neat. It is one of these little kind of like short sitting games that you probably could do something like it in non-VR. But the fact that it is, again, like Power Wash Simulator, entirely about conceptualizing a 3D object, it is helped out by the fact that it is stereoscopic and that you can like look around this thing. Like the actual depth effect as stuff is rushing at you matters, which is good. Any questions about Super Hypercube?
No, it looks cool. How much does it cost?
Everything on VR is way more expensive than you think. It's like $15.
Okay. You know? Okay. So, yeah.
Hey, that's all right.
Yeah.
I feel like everything's like in the 20 to 30 range on VR.
Yes. Yeah.
Where it's like, yeah. Anyway.
It's just the VR tax is what it is. Something that is less successful is a game called The American Dream.
Okay.
I think I know this. This is the
GTA game.
I'll let you talk about it.
Yeah, it's a it's not a GTA game. What it is a comedy puzzle action game where you are on like an amusement park ride that's like Epcot, like hey, the world of the future, but the ride is the ride is sponsored by basically a version of the NRA, and each of these levels is a scene where you are accomplishing like mundane tasks in this 1950s, you know, style world. But by way of interaction, all that you have is two guns. So you solve every single problem, from the time where your character is a baby doing the tutorial up through like having, you know, different jobs and doing things for recreation with just two semi-automatic pistols.
Wait, that's not how you do things?
It's basically the Simpsons episode where Homer gets a gun and he uses it to change the channel.
The lamps.
Yeah, shooting out all the lights after the family leaves him, opening a beer with it. Actually, like that is one of the things you do in the game is shoot the top off of a beer can to drink it at a barbecue. This is less successful because it is a funny joke. However, it is way too talky in terms of like the joke should be the thing that I am doing in with the gun, you know, not the 1950s radio father knows best. Ah, now you've got to play with me. You're going to be able to play catch with your kid using these guns, blah, blah, blah. Like it stops a lot and you're listening to their jokes that don't land nearly as hard as just the act of, you know, playing catch with your dad by shooting the balls out of the air as he throws them at you.
Can you simply like shoot your dad?
They're cardboard standees.
And the game doesn't react to that.
No. It doesn't. So like the play as joke, you know, just I'm doing all this stuff with shooting is very good. I just wish that it got out of its way. With that, because it's fun to shoot stuff in VR, and even reloading is fun in this because you press the button to release the magazine, and then you press the button to release the magazine out of the pistol. Then you slam a button on the arm of the like the chair of the of the ride that you're in, and it shoots the magazine up into the air, and you've got to run the end of the gun into the magazine to reload it like in midair, like you're fucking John Wick.
Nice.
So
the only thing I don't like about that is that you're not shooting out the magazine from your gun somehow,
right? Yeah.
You have to shoot the magazine release with the other gun.
Yeah
if you don't have at least one bullet left, you're fucked. So like it's clever, it's got good mechanics, you know, like good gameplay conceits to it. I just wish that it was a little bit more play, a little bit less we're going to deliver jokes to you verbally.
Yeah,
kind of style.
And is this a game that is trying to like be satirical, make a commentary, or is it just kind of?
Yeah, the commentary is right on the is right on the face of it. It's it's not subtle about it at all. It leans into it like that is the that is the absurdity of it. So I don't know how effective it would be in terms of like trying to change somebody's mind. You know, I don't think this is a game for change or whatever.
Well,
you would say.
I mean, yeah, because in order to change their mind, you have to shoot them in the mind, right? Shoot all of the bad ideas.
No, I'd rather we didn't. Yeah, you would have to. It's the only way. Your only interaction. You don't even have hands. It's just two guns. Yeah.
What if you were Mega Man?
Yes. Wish it was better, but it's a fun experiment at the very least. The last thing that I've been playing is a very fun puzzle game called Eye of the Temple. All right. And what this is a game, playing this on the Quest. It is room scale VR. So you have to have space to play it, because you're going to be walking around. The idea is that you are an Indiana Jones-esque explorer, right down to you've got a whip in your right hand and you have a torch in your left hand. And if you like look up with your eyes, you can see that you've got the brim of a fedora on there, you know. And you are solving these puzzles by walking around and stepping on moving blocks in the game to navigate these Legends of the Hidden Temple ass spaces as the blocks move automatically. And you've got to like physically step, you know, when there's something else for you to step on, physically step over onto it. And you are using your whip to knock things over, to like pull on switches, and to otherwise interact with the world. You're using the torch in order to light stuff up, in order to solve like Zelda puzzle kind of things, you are ducking and stepping, and even like the craziest thing that this does, right? So it's kind of wild, because you've got to be able to do all of this. Your main action is stepping, but you've got to step in such a way, the game has to have you step in such a way that it never takes you out of bounds for the space that you have defined, right?
You have to how hard step without that? Rhythm.
I mean, I don't know. I've never attracted the worm, but it works very fun.
That was a good joke. Sorry, yes. It took me so long to get that.
Okay. Sorry. I was like, wait a minute, was there something I didn't catch?
No, I appreciate it.
Yeah. So like you're like the main thing you're doing is taking steps, but because the platforms are moving in such a way, like it is making it so that you are never stepping too far in one direction that it would take you out of your play space. And it accomplishes this either by having the platforms move and you're kind of brought along with them, or it took me forever for this to wrap my head around this. Some of the blocks in the first stage are actually like rollers, right? So they're big rolling cylinders, and when you step on them, you'll like be dragged along with it a little bit, but you'll be dumped off, right? You'll be dumped off into the water if you do not walk backwards. So yeah, that your character in the game will be like, you know, walking along with it as it's going, but you are walking backward while your character is moving forward.
This action is featured heavily in the trailer for the game, by the way.
Yeah. And also like eventually, like the first level has you just kind of moving over like a shallow pool of water. Eventually you are, you know, suspended in the air, dealing with that. So like this is almost entirely a game about fighting your instinct to trust your, basically you're trying to tell your body, no, you are not going to fall to your death right now. So the overall effect is kind of ridiculous, because it's a little bit like you're one of the kids playing like the bonus round at Nick Arcade.
Yes.
You know, but like it's cool because you're ducking and you're dealing with these whip physics to like wrap it around on stuff and, you know, yank levers and things. You know, it's it starts out really slow paced, but like you can optimize your movements, and eventually it starts moving faster. It's real inventive for VR.
I remember, for example, playing some of the Arkham games, like if for some reason you purposely were not attacking, you could start to see holes in the enemy's AIs where they just kind of stand there looking at you. I say that by way of analogy. If you are purposely not doing the right thing, can you start to see the holes and like it trying to like guide you back so you don't hit a wall?
If you're paying attention to it, you can get a sense for it. Like you can kind of tell, like, all right, I know that I started this standing in the center of the play space, and I was in my case, it had me facing the this will sound super ridiculous. I in my living room, I have a standing fan that's an oscillating fan, and it's nice because I like to remain cool in the warmer months. But also when I'm in VR, I can always tell what direction I am facing and how close nice. I am to that corner by the way that the air is moving, you know? So like mm-hmm. using that as extra information, I can kind of tell the way that it's getting me to walk in circles around it. And I cannot imagine how difficult it was to design around that.
That's cool. almost reminds me of, have you heard that thing that like, human beings, when they're lost, like in the wilderness, naturally walk in circles?
No.
I did not know that.
No. Yeah.
Like, the whole thing about, like, we're going in circles, that's actually a thing. Like, and mm-hmm. there's the theory that that's because, like, you know, humans evolved to basically, like, inadvertently stay in one place so that your tribe can find you.
Oh, okay. I mean, that's what that's what they say. Like, if you're lost, stay still, mm-hmm. You know, in a lot of situations. I'm sure there are some situations where you want to get out of there, but yeah. Yeah,
if there's like a volcano or something.
Yeah. Yeah, so that was that's Eye of the Temple. It's a really neat, like, I kind of took a risk on it based on the description or whatever, because... I don't know. It's a little strange that, you know, it's, you don't run into that. Like for a lot of games, the walking around part is a little bit optional, you know, because your actual movement, you're controlling that with like a left stick, right? Either by doing a teleport or, by actually moving your character around. And, you know, even in games, there are options for how you want to do it. For this one, to make it so that like the only thing that matters is your movement in the space. And which way you are facing, like it is a little daring, I think, but it kind of pays off. Like it's real neat. I enjoy it.
Hmm.
Yeah.
It watching VR trailers is a funny thing to do.
Yeah, I feel like this trailer specifically gives you a good sense of kind of the pace of it and what you're doing. It is funny how the player is composited into it, so you realize just how goofy you look, you know. but at least it gives you the idea. I do not have any people who have to figure out how to make VR trailers.
Yeah. I'm just glad that we've gotten past the point where if you're streaming VR, it shows you like both eyes, mm-hmm. you know, as separate feeds.
Yeah. No, that's a cool feature that's built into the Quest, is you can like cast to a screen. I'm still trying to figure out how to Resident Evil 4 VR or something. But the big problem is getting chat. Like, I could not be responsive to chat because my eyes are in a helmet, right?
See, that's why you need Resident Evil 6 VR and just have chat come up on your phone.
That's why you need to give chat the power to do text-to-voice.
Cool. Yeah, I was going to say.
I don't know. That's
chat
pretty...
unleashed. Yeah. How's your mods?
I think it might be a multi-person job on that one. you know, or have a second person, have a second person who is watching the chat and relaying messages and talking over it.
So now we're back to Lethal Company. You have to have one guy in the ship.
Yeah, you have to have the guy in the chair. Yeah,
you have to have your Otacon.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that's my VR corner. And by corner, I mean the entirety of what I'm going to talk about this week.
You mean your 2-meter-by-2-meter room section. As you walk around in circles.
Yeah, my room that I walk around in circles, baffling my cats. It's funny because when I'm doing it, they're like, they get concerned and you can feel them wanting attention around it. So like they're just constantly rubbing up against my ankles when I'm playing VR.
Makes it extra difficult for the terrain traversal.
Yes.
Yeah.
And that sounds like a grind to me.
multiplayer.
Now it is time for the multiplayer, where we ask you a question and then you answer it. Dennis, what is the question that you ask the nice people?
Yeah, I want to welcome everyone to Too Good to Use Anonymous, where we talk about our compulsion to hang on to items for the perfect moment. So what is an item that you took way too long looking for the perfect moment to use, and did that moment ever come?
We only have one response on this one, and it's a joke response, which is Tyler, who says, you can use items?
I guess I hit a little too close to home with this one. So when you're ready, everyone, what is the acronym?
TGTUA.
TGTUA will be here for
you. Yeah, you don't have to suffer in silence. You don't have to suffer alone. I mean, the example of this is like Mega Elixirs in a Final Fantasy game.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Mm-hmm. Master Ball, but even like the Great Balls, any of the upgraded Pokeballs and Pokemon games as well. Master Ball.
Great Balls,
bro. That can't be a title.
That would make it past the explicit content filters, right?
Possibly. It's unseemly. We've had a lot of horny titles this year.
I would like to point out that during your entire VR thing, with the 3D hole thing, I did not make a glory hole joke.
Hey, you know, that's growth right there is what that is. Yeah.
Chuckle, yeah.
I don't know. I'd like to hear examples from other people. Ben, you volunteered. Go.
I would say every Bethesda game, like anything that gives you like temporary strength boost or a temporary X, Y, or Z boost, I'm like, I'll just use that later. I'll just get through with the regular guns right now. Mm-hmm. And then end of the game, it's still there.
Yeah. Yep. Just contributing to your encumbrance. Yeah.
I think the best, by which I mean the worst, was in Dying Light 1. I did not craft or like upgrade a single weapon.
Wow.
Then maybe I crafted them, but I definitely didn't upgrade. But then finally got to, you know, going into the final boss. And so, like, got into my inventory, got the best katana I'd been saving up, put the best mods on it, all that thing.
Mm-hmm.
And the final boss in Dying Light 1 is entirely a series of quick time events.
So... No.
That's too bad. Dennis, how about you?
Yeah, for me, this question was inspired by a specific story. Without spoiling anything, in Baldur's Gate 3, I realized that I essentially had a monster in a jar.
Yep.
A mimic?
No.
No, like, that's the monster is the jar.
Yeah. In versus is an important distinction. No, but basically, I was like, oh my God. I could leave this in a room of people I want to ambush who aren't immediately hostile to me, and then use Mage Hand to pop open the bottle and just sow chaos. It's such a brilliant plan. And I held on to it and looked for the perfect moment, waited until mid act two. And I picked this up mid act one.
That thing is way under leveled.
Oh yeah, exactly. This is my moment. Release the monster, and they just kind of like, oh, a bug stepped on.
Yeah, no, you just orchestrated that being's execution is what you did. Yes.
So I feel like
this is the most underwhelming ambush ever.
Okay, as I'm going to backseat drive, I feel like the optimal thing for that is you use that when you want to kill a bunch of NPCs without getting blamed for killing a bunch of NPCs.
Yeah. The problem is, and technically that's what I was doing, because the NPCs I was trying to ambush were bad guys, but they were not hostile to me.
Yeah.
So it's one of those like, oh, that's what you're up to here. Very cool. I have something outside. Leave the bottle on the table, close the door.
Mm-hmm.
Boop, and the thing goes after him. But, was like four levels below the people it was trying to attack. just a complete no-go. Yeah. So yeah, that's what traumatized me into posting this question.
I mean, Baldur's Gate 3 is such a, like, if you are holding on to your items, you're actually not really playing the game. Like, mm-hmm. It is entirely the battle system is entirely about those interactions like that. Like,
yes,
it, you know, attacking is almost the last thing you should be doing.
Oh, absolutely. And yeah. It's what I love is with the inventory where, like, it will let you swap items between individuals' inventories anytime with no penalty.
Yeah.
And so with scrolls, everyone has every spell at any time.
Right.
Effectively. Which is great that you just do the craziest stuff. And it's like, you know what? I want my fighter to cast Fireball this round. Mm-hmm. You can do that.
No.
So, yeah. So you should do that, particularly when it comes to using some of those items jar like monsters. I found out. Yeah, jar monsters.
Yeah. Deploy that bad boy. Mm-hmm. Nice. Well, thank you, Dennis, for posting this. And if you would like to participate... you can go to the Duckfeed community group on Facebook and watch the prompts to go up on Monday afternoons.
The Unboss.
Now it is time for the Unboss, where we talk about things that are going on in the world of video games and how we feel about them. Moxie, let's follow up on your Dave the Diver story. What's going on with that and the Game Awards?
Yeah, so the Game Awards... The Game Awards has released, you know, all of the games that have been nominated for the various categories, and people gave it a bit of a side eye when they noticed that Dave the Diver was nominated for Best Indie Game because it is made by a subsidiary of Nexon.
Yeah.
Which is kind of like the Amazon of video game developers.
Yeah, a huge Korean development company. They made Maple Story, which means they fucking printed money mm-hmm. in the early 2000s. It is it's a billion-dollar company, mm-hmm. plus greater than a billion-dollar company. Can you consider something created and published by a company that big to be indie if the project itself is kind of at an indie aesthetic, but also kind of an indie scope, right? Like, you know, if you had told me this was like a small, you know, a game made by a four-person team and published by Devolver, I would be completely fine. It's like, oh yeah, I believe it. Hearing that it's made by Nexon is fucking wild.
Yeah.
So it's very popular right now to do, like, you know, a team of startups within the giant corporation.
Oh, it's yeah, like that's yeah. totally what this is.
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
A couple of things. So this particular article was some dude from the Game Awards that is presumably a very official person. I don't know. I don't care about the Game Awards.
So you're talking about Jeff Keighley, who's like the guy. He's main presenter. Yeah.
Yeah. Basically came out and said, well, I mean, lots of different people have lots of different definitions for what indie means. And, we asked this, panel of 120 people from the industry, which may or may not be a lot of AAA studios.
I was going to say, did half of them work at the company that's being nominated?
The panelists, like the people who are consulting on this are like legit, and they're from like a number of outlets. Like, you know, people who I respect have been brought on as like judges for this kind of stuff.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I think uncharitable take on this is he kind of does like, I mean, who can really say what an indie game is? Where I think the best take on this I've seen is that, like, the core problem here isn't really, is this an indie game or isn't? It's massive corporations are who already have all of the advantages, taking away an opportunity for, you know, recognition from small teams.
Yeah. Like, I don't know, I could see the Dave the Diver slot going to Amnesia the Dark, or Amnesia the Bunker, right?
Right.
Mm-hmm. Independent game. You know, it, like, happens to be a long established studio, but, you know, independent in both scope and, you know, they publish it themselves, right?
Right. Exactly.
Yeah, I think indie is, you know, more about like the resources that are available to it than anything. But I tweeted about this and I blue skied about it. But like, in a way, you could say facetiously, but also, you know, truly, that this is the video games kind of entering into their own "we've made it, baby," because indie or DIY aesthetics being appropriated by the larger apparatus that excluded those creators. It happened in film, happened in music. Like, it's kind of a thing that just is always like every medium goes through. And this is more of a problem of the Game Awards than it is like an actual issue with, you know, the product itself, because I don't know. Nobody who's angry about this that I've seen has said like Dave the Diver is a bad game.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So the thing I think's funny is that Taehwan Kim, the vice president of Nexon America, apparently agrees with you, mm-hmm. because he has said, quote, well, this is Wikipedia translating from Korean. That Dave the Diver may look like an indie, but it is not necessarily the case.
Yeah.
So I feel like that kind of supports your argument that, like, they nominated this because it's got the pixels.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. And I don't think that's a good enough argument for it, right? Yeah.
What I wouldn't want to detract from is, like, hey, if a small team is able to find a way to make the games they want and not have to worry about feeding their families, mm-hmm. by being under the wing of a giant publisher, like,
yeah,
if they're still truly acting independently, more power to you.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
I think it's a question of, like, is that even possible to retain independence while being kind of on the payroll of something larger.
I don't know. It doesn't line up. I don't have a non vibes based argument around that, but that's just gonna have to suffice.
So the award show guy, the
Jeff Keighley,
yes, Jeff Keel, the argument he makes, I do think has some merit, is pointing out that apparently in movies the criteria is how much budget the movie had.
Yeah.
So like Sony Pictures can make an independent movie as long as, you know, it's super low budget.
Mm-hmm.
And so like I can kind of see where that's coming from.
Yeah, I can see that too.
So go on.
Know. But you get something like what is it? Kevin Smith's first movie, Clerks, who distributed that was Miramax, which is fucking Disney. It was Disney at the time, you know. It was a sub label of of Disney, specifically for making more adventurous movies, right? And okay, it's hard to think of a movie that is more indie, you know, than that, or even just even using a non Kevin Smith example, one of my favorite horror movies, Resolution. It's funny if you watch it, because one of the opening title cards, you know, outside the production companies is like brought to you by American Express, because there was just some kind of like independent film grant that American Express was running, and Benson and Moorhead got it, you know, like, okay, well, here we go. Just here's distribution helping us on the festival circuit. Right. So like, mm-hmm. I don't know. It's I'm amenable to the budget thing, but like, mm-hmm. how much of our infinite wealth did we decide to use versus, mm-hmm. How much did we have to make, you know, out of money that was not available to us?
Determines if we make another game or not.
This sits uncomfortably close to the argument of, well, how many meals did the person miss making this?
Yeah,
I don't know. They really suffer for their art.
Yeah, no, and that, I don't
like,
want to do that.
That's not what it is. But it's like you can see how someone who's not thinking about it makes the jump there.
Yeah. I don't.
So
go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, my like snarky hot take on this is that what really happened is people saw a game that doesn't have loot boxes or live service features or anything like that, and was like, this can't possibly be a AAA game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's just like, no. And just again, this is literally only a problem in the context of this dumb award show.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it does speak to this broader problem, though, where aesthetics do kind of matter, right? Because it's even when we're talking about Lethal Company or whatever, I hadn't looked up who made it, right? So like, I assumed it's a single person, but it's like, sometimes that's just all people mm-hmm. have if they don't, you know, take the extra step to look into it.
But. Yeah. There's a certain amount of discourse before this one hit, when the actual nominations came through, but like, oh, should Baldur's Gate 3 be considered an indie game? And again, it's hard to make a non-vibes based argument, but I'm going to say, fuck no.
Yeah. They had people working all around the world on the game, and they touted that when they were talking about how easy it was for them to put out new content. Yeah. So
is it team size that is the determining factor?
It's vibes, which is crazy because Dave the Diver is only technically indie because of the vibes.
Yeah. Wait, so who made Baldur's Gate 3?
Larian. It's a Belgian company, but there's no like huge publisher. In fact, like they paid to get the D&D license and to use that world.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I don't know. The Game Awards providing new frustrations for basically two whole months out of the fucking year.
Can I throw out a small, this isn't a story or anything, but I want to throw out another like shade at the Game Awards. I read this long article talking about how they were not doing a good job with the VR recommendations or the VR nominees because like 4 out of 5 of them were on the PSVR 2, which mm-hmm. is like the majority of VR players cannot play. So it's like, yeah.
Yeah, I was looking at that.
Exclusive to it.
Yes.
Yeah. There's also there's also political shenanigans going on with it, which is going to be interesting.
With the VR or with?
Oh no, with the award show.
I'm curious what.
So there's a, I guess they have some sort of award for like inclusiveness in games or something.
Okay.
And a whole bunch of the people who either are nominated or have been nominated have signed a petition basically asking them to mention the stuff happening in Gaza.
Oh yeah. Mm. Yeah. Which is never going to happen. Yeah. Hmm. I want to talk about something else.
Yeah. Going to scare away all the advertisers for the podcast. No, right? I'm just kidding.
So Larian Studios did make a game called the LED Wars. Oh, and yeah. I'm assuming it's not, but I really hope this is a game literally about light emitting diodes.
Maybe, I don't know.
Lionside Diamond.
It's a weird company. Hey Dennis, speaking of weird companies and stuff, what's going on with that Fallout TV show?
Yeah, let's talk about another apocalypse related to a giant company. So more details are emerging of Amazon Prime's upcoming Fallout TV show. Specifically in an interview, Bethesda confirmed that it will be considered canon. So it is not a retread of the plots from any of the games, but this kind of goes into the hopper for canon lore for Fallout. And I would expect that you're going to see events or characters or elements of this TV series work their way into either the next Fallout or if Fallout 76 is doing this living game thing, whatever that is, you know, that it is going to be official and it's going to impact the other things in this this not genre but this world around it. So that's kind of cool and a bold step for them to kind of do a show uniquely as a show and not trying to cash in on just the familiar characters that are established. And I think that's kind of the right way to do it. Hey, go ahead.
I was going to cynically say, is that because there's no like memorable characters to cash in on for him? Or
I mean, from
one, outside of New Vegas,
one, two in New Vegas, yes, but yeah. I mean, not having it be set in the DC wasteland.
Four's got some good stuff.
Oh yeah, for
robot detective.
Yeah.
Detective. The robot detective's good. Yeah.
And I'm sure there will be little nods or cameos, et cetera, from the games. But mostly I just like the decision of like, this is a story in the world of Fallout.
Yeah.
And not specifically trying to retread a game, which man, as sprawling as those adventures are, I don't know how you do that.
Yeah.
You know,
well, And also, like, I don't know. I'm happy that they're not trying to take a Bethesda narrative and turn it into a series.
Oh, yeah, for sure. But they, you know, they have said some of what you're going to see. The main characters are going to be a sheltered vault dweller, a Brotherhood of Steel member, and then a ghoul bounty hunter.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's interesting to see. My one complaint so far is that the ghoul is way too good looking.
You've got this takes us to the cast. Like I had no idea who was in this until I saw. Wait, they've got Walton Goggins and Kyle MacLachlan.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, like okay, I'm paying attention now.
And I can confirm that No Nose Goggins is still sexy.
Walton Goggins is the ghoul. Yeah.
Also, they're bringing in some stuff from Fallout 76. That's a less than good sign.
No.
A number of the monsters they show in the trailer from Fallout 76.
Hmm. Interesting. Uniquely from Fallout 76.
I'll let the show cook, but I have like zero expectations of this being good.
Yeah.
Honestly, that's probably for the best. That makes it more likely you will enjoy it.
Yeah.
I feel like they should have just gone with like a Vault Boy animated series.
Yeah. But they've got to have the budget. They've got to spend all the money and show it on the screen and then be able to pull it off of the streaming service at some point so they get a tax write-off.
Yeah. Here's the deal. If they're just not making it about the tunnel snakes exclusively, I don't know why they're bothering.
Yeah. No snakes, no deal. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Ben, what's going on in the backstory of Portal?
Yeah, this is just like a minor story, but there's going to be another fan-made Portal game that's coming out on Steam. This is like the third or fourth one, but it'll be free. It comes out in January 2024. The trailer doesn't show much, except for that there's a quote-unquote lot of new mechanics added to it. It's made by a group of volunteers. This is like how previous of the Portal games have been made. There's like Portal Stories Meg, there's Portal Reloaded, I think is the one with the time portal. Mm-hmm. So it's following in the same vein of those in terms of production. I didn't know this before I read the article, but apparently there is a like community fork of the Portal engine that they took from the game, and that's like what they're developing on. So then the other interesting detail is it's free for people who already own Portal 2. It is a prequel. It's supposed to be a prequel to the game. Mm-hmm. But I thought that it was interesting that like you have to own Portal 2 to get this free copy of it. I guess maybe it has to do with the fact that they're using the engine for it. I'm not sure.
Yeah, that makes the most sense to me.
So go on.
Oh, well, I appreciate the fact that, like, the live and let live that Valve has over this, where they're not, like, telling them to take it down or anything like that, and that they're, you know, like, letting that exist in their space. Because, like, if this was Nintendo or something, there would not even be an article published about it.
No, they'd be disappeared. They'd be in a, and just, like, sealed off in a, like, in a cement block at the bottom of the ocean.
Yeah. Thrown down a pipe hole. Yep.
Yeah.
So, who do they have, like, voice in GLaDOS?
I don't think GLaDOS is in it. They have like personality spheres. Because otherwise you would get into kind of the murkier territory.
Yeah.
And that's the same thing as the prequels, like, or the other ones. Like, I know with Portal Stories Meg, they had like a different owner of Aperture that was not.
Not Cave Johnson.
Yeah, correct. So I think it's all going to fall in line with the previous iterations of these types of games. But I'm down for 40 new Portal puzzles, so I'll probably check it out.
Yeah. You played and enjoyed at least one of the previous Portal stories, right?
Yeah, the Portal Reloaded, the one with the time mechanic, I thought was the most impressive fan-made one because it introduced a new mechanic and did a lot of really good iterations with teaching you how to use it. So it was like the most like a professional game that I've seen. And it's free, so crazy. Yeah.
Cool. And I've got one. Here's a story. I didn't know they were making a new Subnautica. Makes sense.
Oh shit! Yeah, what? I didn't know this.
Yeah, it makes sense based on how successful the first one and the expansion were, it appears, at least according to a financial report that came out from the game's publisher Krafton, that new Subnautica is at least right now penciled in for 2025. So we've got a little bit of waiting to do, but it seems like. You know, it seems like we're gonna get another Subnautica.
It's a sub-Subnautica.
Yes, it goes. You go even deeper. You come out the other side of the planet, and like, what the hell? who knows? Maybe.
What is it? The opposite would be Ubernautica, I guess.
Over
Supernautica.
Yeah, Supernautica.
Supernautica.
Yeah.
That sounds like an indie game.
Yes.
I like the release structure of this where it's like, instead of me going back and playing Subnautica again every couple of years, I'll just play the new iteration of Subnautica every couple of years where it's like, yeah, I'm down with playing this loop again.
Yeah.
See, I just want one where you start out in the sub stage and that's the entire game.
Mm.
You never like leave the sub home base?
Oh no, you have to leave, but it's all like projecting your thing, being like, can I, you know, while this monster is distracted by my sub, can I like sneak out the back and go grab what I need?
Oh, yeah. Nice. Well, that sounds like a segment to me. How do you all feel about buttoning it up?
Let us button.
The credit.
Thank you so much, everybody, for tuning in to level number 481. No call to action today, aside from going and watching Duck Stream. It starts today, as you're listening to this Friday, December the 1st, 9 p.m. Eastern time, and goes through until 9 p.m. on Sunday. Again, raising money for the Transactive Gender Project. Which helps out trans youth, their families, and their communities with education and resources, things like that. 10th annual. It's a great cause. Very happy to support it. And it's more important now than ever. So, yeah, I think that's I think that's it. That's all I got.
Are there going to be VODs to watch after the fact in case if someone's listening to this afterwards?
Yes. Yeah, there should be.
Yeah. Sweet.
It'll be VODville.
Maybe. Sometimes there's audio, like on a stream that long, there's something that we play has copyrighted audio that gets muted. So, watch the VOD at your peril. I'm just going to say tune in live if you can. Yeah. Cool. Well, I've been Cole Ross. You can find me on Blue Sky at Cole Ross.
I've been Dennis Furia. You can find me on Blue Sky at Furia Games.
I've been Moxie. Someday I will be on Blue Sky.
I've been Ben Merkel.
And stick around for some titles. Okay.
Got a title-rich environment here.
Okay. I've got two. I've got The Pension is Death. And that's, I have The Monster is a Jar. Okay. What do you have, Dennis?
I had both of those, actually. Okay. Word for word. So The Pension is Death and The Monster is a Jar. I also had, oh no, my hemoglobin. I also had No Snakes, No Deal.
Okay. All right, Moxie, what you got?
I have Hentai Splooge Monster.
Jesus Christ.
Hermit Crab Din. Okay. Long Techno Hallway. And Deploy That Bad Boy.
Okay. Is bad boy one word or two?
Dealer's choice.
Okay, I'm going to do two. Ben, what you got?
I got nothing.
I mean, it's got to be Oh No, My Hemoglobin.
That one caught me off guard, man.
All right. I support this.
So there we go. It is decided.